June 15, 2021. It's the Watt for Pedro Show.
Thank you. Thank you.
Watch for Pedro Show. Happy Tuesday, day before Bloomsday, Raymond's B-Day. Started the show off with John Coltrane, Rise and Shine. We got a heat wave here today, so you'll shine for sure. And then the League of Atomic Music Composers with, Automatic. God damn it, yeah. Read your own writing. You heard a voice here, people. Yeah, Brother Matt, still at the Love Grotto, Pleasure Point, a couple miles south, but we're nearing the end. I think the governor today is ending quite in quarantino mode. But I am not totally man alone because of those engineers in Estonia with their Skype invention. I got with me Brother Tim Perkis. Welcome aboard.
Hey.
That was a real quick intro, huh? we got to thank the Brutal Sound Effects crew for the connect. Thank you much, because I might have, this music's been going on 40 years, and I might have been unaware. But most grateful. Brother Tim, I would like to learn about your journey through music, so please bring your earliest musical recollection, if you will.
Earliest musical recollection? Wow. I got this picture I remember. It brought me back to, it's kind of like 1956, I think. My grandparents gave me this, kiddie drum set. And they also gave me and another relative gave me this toy Geiger counter. And so there's a picture of me, I'm with these headphones on, checking out the cool sounds that are electronic sounds that are coming from moving this kiddie Geiger counter around next to the cymbals on this drum. And I thought, okay, so I'm already doing electronic music.
And if I understand toy drum set, we're talking paper heads.
Yeah, paper heads, right.
I got to tell you a little spiel about this. You know the Urinals?
The what?
There was a SoCal band from the 70s called the Urinals.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And their first record, Surfing with the Shaw and shit, that's what Kevin's playing. He's rocking.
Oh, really? One of those.
And get this. And Kevin and Kel, cool. I'm not Kevin, John Tyler Jones and Kel. Well, hey, this amplifier's got two inputs. Why don't we both plug it? They're using the same amp.
Sure.
Talk about Jeremy Cano, huh? So go on with your story. So you got this picture.
It just took me back, because it was kind of like there was, And of course, my parents hated this. This is a bad toy to give your grandchild, right? It's my parent. Okay, great drums,
Right, because where are you going to prac it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But usually give it to an enemy in the neighborhood, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's true, those paper drum heads didn't really last all that long. I kind of went on, but then when I think of my musical, what I was listening to, in high school.
No, I want to get before that because, everybody shares this kind of experience, right? Like the pad you grew up in, besides that toy drum set and that Geiger counter, was there other musical instruments?
Well, electric guitar came in at a certain point.
At that time, piano or shit like that.
No. We didn't have a piano, but I know I was always if we go to the family picnic or something, go to somebody's house with a piano, I was like, where's Tim? He's off in this room. And I was doing this kind of weird, because I had no musical training at that point at all. Just this kind of free improv on this piano. And people were fine with it, And
you just jumped on it, played it like a drum.
Yeah.
It is because, in the old days, piano was always in the rhythm section with the bass and the drums. So was the guitar. The horns were so loud, everybody had to jump on the eighth notes just to thump out the beat so that people could dance.
Yeah, right.
Can I ask you about school? Grade school, right? Were you in the marching band or the choir or shit
that? Yeah, I was in the marching band.
What'd you work?
I played clarinet and then oboe. I played oboe and then saxophone when we were marching,
Licorice stick and then the sax. Both reeds. Oboe, double reed.
Yeah. That was cool because, they had one and they would provide it, so I didn't. I had a clarinet.
I got to tell you, the best rockin' oboe song, or oboe rock song, let's put it that way, Out of the Blue, Roxy music.
Oh, I got to check that out.
The oboe cuts through, right?
Oh, Out of the Blue.
And then the other double reed thing is the bassoon. And I'll tell you, the trippiest thing, usually you'll see, if angels are playing shit, it's usually a harp, right? Not Mr. Gaudi's Familia Sangra, the Barcelona. The angels are rocking bassoons at the hatch.
Oh, yeah, in carvings in the church there and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That should be nuts. Yeah. So, did you learn how to read and shit?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. Yeah. And what was the experience? Was it positive?
Oh yeah, it was positive. I loved it. I loved it, the whole thing, you know. And you know, yeah, I was playing. Yeah, the marching band was fun. You know, I loved the whole like you know, kind of all these maneuvers. And you pick up squad and you go around a corner and you kind of like fan around a corner and all that kind of stuff.
You're getting ready to work the room. Can I ask you the first record you bought with your own money?
First record I bought with my own money, probably the Beatles, probably Magical Mystery Tour.
Oh, yeah. Good record.
Because, you know, my sister, my older sister was a huge, you know, I Love Paul, you know, kind of Beatles fan. You know, with, like, hearts all over. She put these hearts all over the Beatles records and stuff.
Okay, what about the first gig you went and saw?
Oh, the first gig. Grateful Dead came and played at this kind of teen center dance, like when I was in high school. It was unbelievable, you know, kind of, this is a night, maybe 1967.
So they're not Warlocks, they're Grateful Dead.
No, they're the Grateful Dead. So I don't know, maybe that's not exactly the right date. It's 67 or 8.
I don't know. I'm not that big of a knowledge on that. Although,
but no, they were the Grateful Dead.
I tell you, when I read the interviews with Jerry Garcia, he seems like he was pretty interesting guy, but somehow the music never got to me. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I kind of got into them later when I was, you know, in a big time in college and all that.
Richard Meltzer told me, you got to listen to Working Man Dead. That's the good one.
Yeah, I like that, yeah.
Well, one day I'm going to. No wine before it's time, though.
So, it's not like going to the dentist, man. It's not going to be that hard.
One time, you know, I went to the Econo dentist thing at USC, you know, student.
And yeah.
The lady, the intern, had both her feet on my chest and a plier in my mouth.
Oh, my God.
A little bit of pain involved. So Tim.
Yeah.
You mentioned drums. Did you ever get a real kit?
No, I never did.
Okay.
Because I was like, you know, because my, you know, yeah. Yeah, my parents, it was, you know, they were not, no,
I understand.
That kind of made set their attitude about having drums in the house.
Yeah, can I ask you this? You're not after school, like graduate, but in the afternoon, the basement band, the bedroom band, the garage band, did you do that?
Well, no, but I did no, that's right. I didn't really have a social music life outside of school.
That's a good way to put it.
But I had my electric guitar. At that point, I was into Hendrix and I had electric guitar and I'm in the basement with the electric guitar.
Judy's your inspiration. He's the man, man.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the sound. I mean, we're listening to all this music I've been doing for years on the computer and stuff. I mean, that's really kind of the inspiring sound.
Still Jimmy, right? Okay.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he's a big inspiration to me. Uh-huh. You know, I want to be his Billy Cox. I remember one time he said, Mitch Mitchell, that's my Elvin Jones.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
So, like with Jimmy, man, I want to be his fucking Billy Cox. So, you know the way the bass is, right? The politics, you look good making the other cast look good. So, you know, uh-huh. you got working for Jimmy.
Yeah.
James Jamerson on any of those Motown tunes.
Oh, man,
So, what do you do? Are you, like me and D-Boom in the 70s, we don't write any songs because nobody we knew did. So we're trying to learn stuff off records. Is that what you're trying to do?
Well, back in those days,
of course.
Well, you know, I wasn't... Yeah. God, you know, I never really tried to learn tunes, I don't think. So.
That's okay. I think that's a good thing.
I was kind of like, man, because Jimi Hendrix for me was all about that sound.
Right.
And I wasn't like, you know.
Here's another thing about Jimmy. Never played the same song the same way twice. Yeah, yeah, you listen to all the live stuff, they're never the same.
Yeah, right.
I dig that.
But that's something, you know, so I remember somebody saying, you know, because I've been in this kind of improv scene all along, and that's what that always is. It's kind of like every day is different, and there's no tunes or anything.
Right.
But the difference between a rock band that has a set and is, like, learning these tunes and any kind of improv free jazz band is, like, I mean, there is that element of kind of getting it down and knowing how to do it correctly in some way or something that is always in the rock thing that was never in any of this free jazz kind of stuff. So,
Do you think at the bottom of the barrel or end of the day, or because you mentioned day as a metaphor, say, music is music?
Well, yeah.
Okay. Because the genre thing is kind of a Berlin Wall.
Well, right. No, it's really true. I mean, it's all, there's all these, there's only mix, you know, what was it? Lou Harrison was a great teacher, you know, later on. And it's like, there's only mixed genres. There's only mixed music. That's the only kind of music there is where like some, you know, genres get mixed. People listen, everybody, people listen to everything. The truth of the matter is, right?
Right, the influences are influenced by those they are influencing.
Yeah, right. And this is...
That's the end of Lady from Shanghai with that fucking mirror. I think that's up in the city where they finished it.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, let's play some Tim Perkins music here. The Hub. Thank you.
so good. You're so thank you.
Not for Peter Show. Not Clam Free, people. Started that chunk of music off with a Hub, Wax Lips 2. Then Sam Locke Ward with Forever. His buddy Bob Bucko Jr., both these guys, Iowa City, Iowa State. Sam Locke Ward, Iowa City. Bob Bucko, Dubuque, Driving Eyes Closed. And Joe Cardamone with part 19 of his Quarantina series. You're so cool. He's got like kind of Prince spelling there. Fuck me up, Joe. Number two. And then Bombas Prentin out of D.C. Hopeful they'd meet again, yet doubtful. These cats have made about 4,000 or 5,000 recordings, maybe 5 gigs in 40 years, but they're still going. Tim Perkis finally with Zig. Obviously the part one, right? Because Zag's part two. Okay. Back to your story. So you're at home with the electric guitar and just trying to find your voice with it. You're not doing it. You're not trying to be part of a band, but you're not trying to learn songs off records.
Right. That's true. Yeah.
Are you making
recordings? You know, I haven't really thought about this in a really long time.
That's okay. That's what the show's fucking for. But are you recording yourself?
At that time, this little kind of like, I remember that was another kind of grandparent gift. I mean, realize they were giving me cool stuff.
It was like a Yo-em, Tim, Yo-em.
Yeah. This little kind of reel-to-reel, reel-to-reel tape recorder, you know, with kind of these like 3-inch reels, you know?
Sure.
You know, really, really a little thing.
I remember them. And, in fact, you
see
him at the beginning of every Mission Impossible.
Yeah, exactly.
They burn up after they give the spiel to Mr. Phelps.
It had an explode feature, you know. But it was like, it would make these kind of crap. I mean, there was no idea of line in or anything, so it's just like one of these weird crystal mics.
Well, this is why I want to ask you this, Tim, because, you know, somebody like Delia Derbyshire. Electronic music actually has a big tape background, so that's why I ask about the tape.
Yeah. It's true.
Do you think some of your beginning of electronic music came from this experience of you trying to just document your guitar work?
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Because also, I had this. I remember doing all this weird shit at that time. Also, of like, kind of taking pictures of like the guitar and taking pictures of like. I had this weird thing of like kind of like a rubber dragon and these pictures I'd make of kind of like moody looking kind of trying to make some kind of moody art, you know, with these photographs of dragons and stuff like that, you know, and the guitar, you know. It's weird, you know.
Weird's okay.
Weird little,
let
like
the freak flag fly, you know. It's called expression,
it was a
right?
Weird little like.
So you're mixing the medium, hobby. Huh? You're using imagery and sound.
Yeah, at that time, I did start doing that. Yeah.
Now, as far as academic, you know, music at school, that's the marching band stuff. Do you pursue this, like with college and shit?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, because in college I got into the idea of. My major in college, which was, kind of in the 70s, early 70s, was video and computer art. It was like something I put together and decided I wanted to do. You know, they didn't have a major in that. But, we had these the Porta Packs, they call them, these kind of reel-to-reel video recorders that were coming out of Japan at the time. It's kind of half-inch videotape. And I was, I was a video artist. That was the idea. I was going to be a video artist, you know.
Okay.
And making these kind of, abstract graphic kind of videos or different kinds of cut-ups with different clips and, get some clips of Evel Knievel or something and kind of cut them together with, Soul Train, the TV dance party.
John Cornelius.
and just making this kind of amateur video cut up pieces.
But then you're also supplying the audio. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So, I should have asked you, not just the guitar, did you get into pedals?
No.
Okay.
I didn't have any budget for anything.
No, because I just think that's another, like, I don't know, entry point for electronic music, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
I've had people on the show, that's their gig, they play pedals.
Oh, yeah.
They don't even have the guitar or the bass.
Yeah, I mean, that Brutal Sound Effects series was like that. Yeah, I mean, that a lot of these people, it was like a punk band, but there's nobody singing, and there's no guitars, but there's big amps and pedals and microphones. And I thought, well, that was a cool act, you know.
So, none of this stuff you're performing live yet, right?
No, I'm not performing out anywhere. This is all, you know.
Tell me about your first performance.
That's interesting. Okay, when was that? Well, my first performance out somewhere. It would have been, you know, we kind of like, I got for this group, I remember we called it Loose Tubes Video, and it was like some kind of video, kind of commune, or these kind of, or like collective of video artists, you know, and we did these kind of installations with, you know, kind of video feedback. I got into that and all that. So we were doing that in public and performance. And again, it was always the sound. If we were doing sound, the sound was kind of like, there's a point when I switched over and I just got interested in the sound, you know. But for years, it really was the sound was kind of secondary to this video stuff.
Ah, okay. Understand.
Yeah. And, you know, video feedback was a big thing at the time because just discovering that and what you can do with that and amazing abstract patterns and this kind of whole psychedelic bent, you know.
Sure. And lots of stuff to carry to the gig.
Yeah. No kidding. But that was another thing. You know, I think that was part of the reason I got out of video at that time, you know, and got more into the sound, because you kind of had to work in somebody else's studio if you're doing video at that time. Nobody had their own video gear or anything like that.
Too much dinero, right?
Yeah, it was too expensive and it was too much, you know, too much to slip around and stuff.
Yeah,
so,
right.
So actually could work on my audio stuff at home, you know. And so I just kind of moved in that direction, you know, got more concentrated on that.
So now you're saying your first performance was actually like a part of a collective installation.
Yeah. Part of these video, like a video.
Well, I always ask about the first gig because you can only have it once, right? So you think it was a success?
Yeah, I do. I
you
have this
didn't throw shit, you know.
It's really interesting. And this is a great question because I got to tell you, I hadn't thought of that at all, like in so long, you know? Yeah. But yeah, I think it was a success. I had this video, like black and white video projected in those days, had this really cool kind of the super grainy underwater kind of thing. You
like
know?
The soap operas or Dark Shadows.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was like, because it was illuminating the room with
Dark Shadows, Barnabas Collins.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Not the actual texture of the video.
Yeah. It had this vibe of like, you know, yeah, really dark, a dark room, a dark place, you know, underwater often.
Yeah, and there's a John Coltrane live thing from Germany. And Elvin's got a really loud sweater. He must be dying, sweating to death. But it's got this weird silvery kind of platinum.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's trippy about that. Look, we're at the end of the first hour, June 15, 2021, Dish Wap Pedo Show. Special guest, Tim Perkis. Hold tight for hour two. June 15, 2021. It's the second hour of the Wap for Pedo Show.
Thank you. Yellow jacket lining mimics the sun. Pond life stasis, no UV pill. Tractor rumble from frozen farm. Humble braggers with puffer arms.
For Pedro, she'll start the second hour with Lou Drift.
Yeah, that's
Lou Drift.
Fucking asshole. You just told me, people. Talk about Alzheimer. You're always learning new names of songs. So it's Lou Drift, like short for Lewis, huh? Or Louie.
Yeah, it's like Lou.
And from a project called The Hub, again, because like Wax Lips 2. You got to tell me about this Hub thing. But first let me tell, Ben Salter featuring Steve Rose out of Tasmania with Cold Season, then Mango Coffee, Jesse Sheldon, which is in Sydney with the Lucas Sabella brother. Heinbach featuring Walter van Veldhoven, What We Do. And then finally, Tim Perkis and Kiku Day with Forehead. Forehead. Okay. Wrong again, Watt. Well, I slaughter people.
So oh, these are crazy.
Big apologies to you, Tim. So explain to me this stuff. Like, I mean, as you gravitate away from video and more into audio, is that when these other projects come in, the hub?
Well, this is, you know, kind of after I came to California. Because, you know, I went to school up, college up in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Ah, Stooges Town.
Huh?
Wolverines.
Yeah, Stooges Town, absolutely, yeah. Right,
right. And,
yeah, I was there in the 70s, right? And then, you know, I then moved to the Bay Area after that for graduate school, where I was, you know, that, you know, didn't really take, but I was, you know, I came out to, you know, do more video here at College of Arts and Crafts here in Oakland and stuff. But I really gravitated towards the music stuff and electronic music. And I hooked up with these guys, the League of Automatic Music Composers, that were, all about hooking up these little computers that we had at the time, you know, these little, you know, single board computers, or I had one of those Radio Shack things, and, you know, hooking them together, and they are like kind of listening.
I think
to
it was called
other.
The TRS-80, right? They called them trash.
Yeah, TRS-80, exactly. That's what I had. Yeah.
And the Commodore 20s and 40s and
Commodore 64,
yeah.
But these guys had these little Kims that look like, they just look like a electronic board, you know.
Breadboard, no right? We called them a breadboard in those days. You put pins in them and
And so we just wire these things all together, you know, and say it was kind of like coming out of this idea, kind of like if you have an analog synthesizer that you're patching together. You know, some of these guys who were in this, I hadn't done this before, but they came out of like, okay, if they had friends that had analog synthesizers, when they'd get together, they'd just hook them all together into one big synthesizer, right?
Oh, that's bitching. Instead, yeah, the idea of the fake fucking keyboard.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, I'm always amazed people think about the old days of, like, it was great and, like, Mini Moog and all that stuff. It was like, Mini Moog? Fuck that. You know, it's kind of like it's some kind of, like, you're trying to pretend it's...
Your
like
trumpet or string section.
Yeah, no, I mean, no, it was just all about, well, what does this electronic stuff want to do on its own?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what interests us, you know.
Yeah, I want to play this thing you did with Hiromi Vardy, Moon.
Oh.
The moon was getting closer and closer and closer to me, that it was practically right outside the window. I could almost touch the moon. And it was most beautiful, beautiful thing, that there was incredible lights and the string was coming out of it. Millions of strings reaching out, and there was a dewdrops on the strings, full of dews all over the place. It was shimmering and beautiful. I've never seen anything so beautiful. So I stretched my arm to touch, and I cannot remember anything. Thank you.
Thank you.
Black for Pedro show, that chunk of music started with Tim Perkins and Romy Vardy with Moon. And then Lisa Cameron with Sandy Ewan doing Platypus, a little pun rock here, right? Because P-L-A-I-D, right? Like some of the flannels I wear. Huh? I got some John Fogerty. And then Tim Perkins with Jean-Marc Montera and Marseille, of course, the town. Duo. Marseille Duo, good town. I think second biggest city in France. So tell me about these collabs here, these duets.
I just had this idea, and this is why I thought I'd bring to you, because this is kind of what I've been working on as my kind of, shut-in COVID project. It's like, going through, I know a lot of people doing this kind of thing, going through these old tapes and old files you have and trying to figure out, what's good in that old stuff from years past. And so this thing I did with this woman, Hiromi Vardy, who is a very interesting sort of poet and performer, former, we did this visual piece that she had designed in this very small theater, in Berkeley. And, I did the sound with it. And she had this wonderful, that piece, Moon, is like a fragment from this wonderful story she was telling about a time she had this experience of getting kind of transfixed by this moon and kind of falling off this balcony, in this kind of trance, like, and the whole experience was really, it's really interesting,
And Kiku Day?
Kiku Day was a woman who lived in the Bay Area for a while. She's a Japanese-Danish musician. Who I think she's back in Copenhagen now, or maybe London. I'm not sure where she is right now, but this was, she was playing a shakuhachi, and maybe there's another word for it, these really big shakuhachi. I don't know if you've ever seen those kind of oversized shakuhachi. And she did this really interesting music that was, it was inflected with traditional shakuhachi playing, but of course, doing these kind of contemporary kind of
extended technique.
Yeah, extended techniques. That's the word I was looking for. Yeah.
And the Hub?
Well, the Hub is this band some of these guys I was telling you about, the League of Automatic Music Composers, that are kind of hooking all these computers together.
Right.
And the Hub was kind of the band that followed from that, and it was another version of the same thing. And that thing's been going, since those days, we've been playing all these years.
Ongoing concern.
Yeah.
Jean-Marc Montera?
Oh, well, he's a guitarist from Marseille, and very interesting, like improvising, kind of a rock / improvised noise guitar guy. I had this in 2013. I had this nice residency in Marseille where I got to spend 6 months in Marseille, and that was a blast. To play with some really interesting French musicians and others.
That's the town that Arthur Rimbaud ended up dying in. I went to the monument to him.
Who died there?
Arthur Rimbaud.
Rimbaud. Oh yeah.
Right. He was running guns. He only did poems for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, he's
gone. That's a fucking trip. So. What I gather is you like these collabs because it takes your music to a different place each time you're dealing with them.
Right. I mean, that's just, I really like these. And, I've been playing in this kind of improv scene in the Bay Area for years, which is kind of this, it's almost like being in one big band that changes a little bit for each gig or something. So we all play together in different ways,
Sure.
Different groupings. And it was a beautiful thing, And so, as I thought, well, finally I should like get out all these, because I'd done a lot of these duo projects over the years. It never been my main thing at any one time. But, when you look back over all these years of them, there's a lot of them and a lot of interesting things have happened. So that's kind of, that's kind of where.
Now, when it comes to like a collab, how is it decided in your case, who's going to drive?
Well, it's kind of interesting, right? I mean, there is this sort of culture of, and I was surprised, actually, you mentioned Jerry Garcia earlier.
Yeah.
And I heard this interview with Jerry Garcia recently, And I never thought that the Bay Area scene I was part of was really connected with those guys at all, right?
Yeah.
But there's a way in which it does share this thing, you know, because they were asking him, yeah, if you have a new song you want the band to play, you know, how does that happen? How do you bring it to the band or whatever? And he says, well, the first thing you got to know with this band is you can't tell anybody to do anything. So you play it for them, and they'll like go, well, you know, I could do this, you know, in that part, or I can do this and that. You know what I mean? Everybody's just kind of deciding on their own what it's going to be.
All right. And
so this kind of culture of the improv scene around here that sort of came, you know, after those guys in a way, but it really shares something of that.
But something's got to be the fuse. Something's got to get lit, right?
Well, you know, this is the thing. Yeah. I mean, it's not necessarily a song, but there's some area you're kind of exploring. And then I think this thing where just people like recognize, and this is the thing I find so exciting and beautiful when this happens, you know, it's like, well, when something happens, you know it. You know, when something happens and it comes up, and maybe out of some little plan you had, maybe you had some tune coming in, maybe you had some kind of rhythmic idea. But when it starts happening, everybody just recognizes that, and you don't want to break that. You want to stay on it.
Absolutely.
And make it happen, right?
Right, absolutely.
And it's really sort of focused on that idea that, well, we're going to follow it where it goes, and then when something good happens, you know, are you alert to it, and are you able to, like, follow it and, you know, kind of make each other sound good and make it, you know, make something that emerges out of more than just your plan. And so I've always been kind of focused off in that direction, you know.
I love that idea, man. Love it. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, June 15, 2021, Dish Wap Peters, our special guest, Tim Perkis. Hold tight for hour three. June 15, 2021. It's the third hour of the Wap for Pedro show.
What I'm offering here is about 300 stuffed penguins of various shapes, sizes, and species to a deserving child. A deserving child. I'm going through a pretty weird time in my life right now, having just gone through a breakup, graduated college, and temporarily living in my parents' house before I move out for good in the fall. Though I remain unemployed because my philosophy degree is at such a premium, and sifting through my room, which has become this strange amalgam of my adolescence and burgeoning adulthood, it's been brought to my attention that I probably won't catch a man or have anyone believe I'm about to turn 23 with 300 penguins and a bunch of purple furniture around. And that, looking at my current room, one might think some sort of 13-year-old with developmental issues is living here. I loved penguins as a child, long before they were trendy, and I collected them, often putting on penguin weddings and penguin ballet recitals, where I made costumes for individual penguins, all of whom had names that I kept track of in my penguin censuses. I could recite all 17 species of penguin in alphabetical order. Adelie penguin, African penguin, chinstrap penguin, eastern rockhopper, emperor penguin, a red-crested penguin, fiordland penguin, Galapagos penguin, gentoo penguin, humboldt penguin, king penguin, little blue penguin, macaroni penguin, northern rockhopper, snare penguin, western rockhopper. And the yellow-eyed penguin. So yes, I feel justified in saying I want a deserving child, a child that will really well love. Penguins, and cherish her or his or their youth with them as it slowly slips away. It slips away. It slips away. We'll be right back.
There are foxholes in the sky. Yeah.
Watch for Pedro Show. Third hour, start off with Tim Perkis and Joey Leandre.
Joey Leandre.
Almost got it right. Dual, in fact, it's called Dual Improv. You helped clear that mystery up. Then we had Veda Hill with 300 Staff Penguins. Veda Hill, she made this whole series of tunes, you know, kind of show tunes, right? Cabaret shit. But the lyrics, the libretto, if you will, it comes from Craigslist. So, 300 Staff Penguins, yeah, it's usually some kind of sex trip. Want ads, right? Deep in the Woods featuring Rogue Spore from Dublin, Ireland, with Panic Track, and Hands on Pot Crew with the Butta Abel. Fuck, destroyed another language, people, sorry. Tim Holehouse with Spirit out of England, and Tim Perkis with Thea Farandian. Skyrider. So, there's two more collabs. Let's enlighten us, please, Tim.
Yeah, well, again, these are just, you know, things that I've gone through and people I've worked with over the years, and I just thought that was a good one, you know. And Joey Leandre is this fantastic French bassist, kind of, you know, big feature in the kind of new music scene, kind of classical, modern classical.
I got to tell you, the Arco bass really works well with electronic stuff. I mean...
Yeah.
It's right.
I love it. Yeah.
You know, Paul Chambers, and you know, the Arco thing is a bitchin' thing, but man, I really like the way you guys put this thing happen together.
What this thing was, Joel Leandre?
With the Arco bass. With a,
It's called a bow. Yeah.
There's a German way and a French way. It depends how you hold it, right? Under or overhand. Yeah. But just this kind of legato thing where it's, you know, it stretches it out. It ain't all little points, right? It's it just works really well. Yeah. And there's this kind of texture and nuance to it that's so subtle, but so fucking fundamental.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I really dig it. And so when you come up with these collabs, are there just chances that you guys come together, or do you investigate candidates?
Well, you know, they come out of different situations. I was trying to do this duo collection. So this duo in particular, this was a quartet actually we had with a drummer and a trombone player that we did a session, Oakland, you know, at that time, right? So some of these things are pulled from different situations like that, you know.
Actually, the bone is a lot like Arco bass. That legato thing in the bass clef world, you know. Hey, I got to say, electronic music works really good in the low end.
Yeah, I know. I love it. You know, I started playing bass recently just for cover, you know, just because I dig it so much. And I'm no good at it, but, you know.
Wow. What kind of bass you got?
Well, you know, I got one of these. I got one of these U-basses. Do you know about those things?
Yeah, they got kind of rubbery strings and like little ukuleles.
Yeah,
they're
really crazy, like super rubbery strings. And even though it's short, like, it's basically the size. It's a baritone ukulele, so it's really short. It's like, I don't know, 20-some inch, you know, scale on it. You know, it's a range of a real bass.
Oh, yeah, I used an electric version of one like 30 years ago with Elliot Sharp. It was called the Asbury. And in fact, you had the strings were so rubbery, you had to play them with baby powder on your fingers and stick to them.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
it's hard to keep it, too.
You really get sweaty or you're on
Yeah, the, you know, these yeah. newer, the ones like you got are much better. I want to play this, what is this, the House of Trans Infinite Light?
Yeah.
face, mama's face.
Thank you.
Last music for this edition, Tim Perkis with The House of Trans Infinite Light. A little different than the Lead Belly tune, but music is music, people. A Silver Bootleggers medley live from Nuns Island, Quebec, from Manuel Armida. And then Troop a Troop out of Poland, Danzig with Home. And finally, Tim Perkins with Scott Walton. Blind Signature, Scott Walton.
Scott Walton, yeah, Scott Walton is a bass player, actually. You know, he's an incredible, upright bass player.
Yeah.
He's a lot, you know, jazz kind of guy mostly. And, you know, we've been collaborating, but I just heard him playing the piano once. I thought, God, what's he playing? Like, he's playing Ligeti piece or something. He's like, oh, no, I'm just improvising, you know? So I thought, oh, man. So that was really his background. So I just talked him into doing a duo piano disc with me, you know? So we did that's just from a CD we did released of, you know, duos of electronics and piano.
You brought up a good thing. Can I ask you, is surprise important in improv music?
What's that?
Is surprise important in improv
surprise?
Music?
Absolutely. You know, I think, man, I remember I heard this quote from this guy, this fabulous pianist. What was that? Slavoslav Richter. You know, he's a classical pianist from Russia, right? And he just says, straight out, surprise is the most important thing in music.
And like improv really embraces that, right?
And in improv, yeah. But he's talking about like playing Chopin.
Just anything.
Too.
Yeah, right.
I totally believe this because it's kind of like, it's so interesting because there's more to it than you realize because, you know, if you just do any fucking thing you want and then it's just one damn thing after another, there's no surprise, right?
Right. Almost cruise control, right? Sleepwalk.
Yeah, right. So you've got to kind of like, there's a way you got to kind of imply it's going someplace and then go somewhere else.
Right, right.
So it's kind of a weird thing, you know. It's kind of a little irony twist thing.
That irony, right? And what's the opposite of irony?
What's the opposite of irony? That's a good question.
Wrinkly.
Wrinkly. Yeah, it's got to be wrinkly. Exactly.
No. I think I saw that in the bottom of the laundry basket. but you're right. You're right. I also keeping the listener awake, the gig goer awake, to keep them from so much life pounds you into the fucking cruise control.
Well, right. Because you got to, people have to give some idea where it's going. But I mean, I think in general, this is what art does, is like give people the thing where, I thought I knew what was going on, but now I'm not quite so sure.
You know what D. Boone said? He said, art is to prove that we're alive.
Exactly. I think that's really the thing. It's kind of like the way it's sort of the opposite of science of like, just to remind us that we're not on top of it all. And, you know, it's like amazing things happen and they will continue to happen and surprise us, you know?
Right. You know, sometimes I take pictures. And I know photographers, right, they get their studio, everything under control. But I go out into nature. So if there is a picture, I don't make it happen. I'm just ready to hopefully capture it. I call it an eye gift.
Yeah, yeah. Eye gift. Yeah, that's nice. Yeah.
Okay,
no, I'm sort of, I'm definitely down with this way of thinking about art. It's like, well, what can you catch that's going on, you know?
Right.
How can you surprise yourself, because that was another thing about...
Good point.
I make these instruments that kind of don't do exactly what I ask them to do, these computer instruments. You know?
Yeah.
You kind of, you know, they're kind of like, it's an instrument I can play, and I can go up and down and around and, you know, kind of control it. But every now and then, it just does stuff I didn't expect. And that's good. You know, I feel like that's kind of, it's kind of going back to this childhood thing you brought up earlier, my, you know, kind of playing the guitar in the basement with myself or something.
Yeah.
It's like the thing of like, well, I want to be surprised by what my instrument does, even when I'm playing solo, you know, like you are when you're in a band and you're kind of surprised by what people do and you got to deal with it, you know?
Yeah. Right. Where can people find you on the internet?
Well, there's, There's a SoundCloud thing with my name, Tim Perkis.
Okay, people, that's TimPerkis.
Right. And there's also Bandcamp. Okay. You know,
but there's no Tim Perkis website?
Yeah, no, there's Perkis.com, yeah.
Oh, okay. PERKIS.com, people, and you probably got links to everything else from
there. Yeah, I got links there, too.
Yeah. Tim, when you record, if you find another batch of duets or whatever you're doing and you get it going, will you come back on the show? We can play it and talk about it, because I could talk to you like for a buttload of years.
Oh, yeah, man, this is great. I love talking to you, yeah.
Okay, absolutely. Okay. Thanks so much. Truly an honor. People, it's been the June 15, 2021 edition of the WAP Fever Show. Keep your powder dry.